Last-Minute Shopping, or Trials and Tribulations of the Pegasus Galaxy Mall, written and read by Kisa Hawkland. Summary. Last-minute holiday shopping in Pegasus is slightly more daunting than on Earth. The stalls go on for miles, Rodney whines. We really have to stop at every one. Ronan claps him on the shoulder so hard he sinks 6 inches deeper into the muck they call a road on this planet, and Shepard stops the next stall dutifully. There are a row of prizes in the back, clear jars filled with pink, yellow, purple, orange, green, and blue liquid. What do we have to do to win those? Shepard asks, pointing at the jars. The woman at the stall smiles up at him and bats her eyelashes. Rodney rolls his eyes. Maybe it's a flirting contest and they'll end up with a full collection. It is a game of skill, she says, and removes the silk cloth from the counter in front of her. There's a hexagonal game board carved into it, and she shuffles a handful of tiles in her hand and deals them out onto the board. They have several different pictures on them. There are recessed bowls set into the wood containing several different types of game pieces in 6 different colors. She explains the rules and tells them at least 3 people must play, one of which must be her. Rodney claps his hands together gleefully. It's Settlers of Catan, Colonel, or close enough. The rules aren't the same at all, though, and it's Taylor that takes home the prize, a glass jar full of viscous green liquid, the consistency of pea soup. Use that sparingly, the woman says as they turn to leave. A little goes a long way. Taylor looks at the container again, swirls the liquid a little. Ronan tilts his head and looks at it as well. You don't think that's, he says, squinting at the liquid. Taylor smiles and hugs the container to her. I don't know, she says, leaving Rodney to glance over her head at Shepard, a little worried. But since it is mine, I will have plenty of time to figure that out. I thought we agreed all winnings were going to be consolidated, Shepard says, flashing a half-smirk at Taylor. Rodney rolls his eyes again, and pleads with whatever gods are present in the Pegasus Galaxy for the stall that gives away prizes for flirting and superficial charm. And then he tacks on a prayer for the prizes to be ZPMs. No, John, Taylor admonishes, hugging the pea soup to her chest. That was what you said we should do. I don't recall anyone but Rodney agreeing with you. The next stall is a muffin-throwing contest. At least, Rodney thinks they're muffins, until Shepard clocks him with one because of his non-stop commentary, featuring Ronan's ability to throw them right through the wooden targets and into the next stall, and Shepard's ability to narrowly miss the kid running after Ronan's muffins. Then Rodney finds out they're hard as rocks, and develops a pretty good goose egg on his forehead. Someone is actually giving away a ZPM as a prize. Unfortunately for Rodney, it's the $1 million purse for a boxing contest, so there's no chance for him to win it. Shepard offers to put up Ronan's entrance fee if he'll give Shepard the ZPM when he wins, and Rodney kicks himself for not thinking of that. Taylor tries to get Shepard to pay her entry fee, too, but he's running low on carthets, and there are easily 100 more stalls to visit. Rodney's feet ache just thinking about it. He would have paid Taylor's entrance fee himself if Ronan hadn't entered. He's the only person she can't beat consistently in hand-to-hand. Without Bantos, that is. With them, she can even kick his ass. Taylor puts her nose in the air and pays the ringmaster with 3 carthets from her own purse right before he closes the sign-ups. It turns out Lorne has entered himself into the contest, too, and Rodney spares a thought for Atlantis until he realizes Major Teldy is still on base, and Zelenka doesn't leave Atlantis unless someone is dying or Rodney orders him to. Lorne goes home with a consolation prize of some ancient knick-knack, beaten by Taylor, which is great fun to watch. And Ronan pips Taylor with a lucky shot to her solar plexus when she tries to box his ears. Apparently Rodney had misunderstood the prizes, because Ronan wins a pony, and it's Taylor that ends up with the ZPM. They split up after the fight because they still need to find gifts for each other, and it's much easier for Rodney to find the stalls with games of skill or chance, those where he has a hope of winning some kind of prize. The first stall playing a chess-like game gives him Taylor's present, a silk scarf that he can have hand-stitched with anything he wants. He thinks about it for a long time before finally telling the woman to put an Athosian meditation chant on it. For all beings, joy and love. Rodney searches for over an hour before he finds something to give Ronan. He finds a man from Satita selling some of the most intricate toys he's ever seen. There are tiny wooden machines that look like houses or stores, but have several small ball bearings in them that need to be maneuvered into certain positions to make other parts work. There's a windmill and horsemen and a complex system of pipes that the man says is a replica of one of the water treatment facilities. Unfortunately, his game is a shooting game, and while Rodney is no slouch, the prize he wants, a set that is a replica of what went for Main Street in Ronan's hometown, is the grand prize, and you have to achieve 10 bullseyes in a row to do it. He searches around for Sergeant Lee, the sharpshooter on Lorne's team, but the only person he finds is Shepard. Shepard isn't a bad shot. Rodney's seen him shoot plenty of times, not least when he took the time to make sure Rodney cleared his firearm recertifications, but he's no sharpshooter. Rodney's desperate enough to ask Shepard to help him, though, and they head back to the booth. "So you'll put both our names on Ronan's present, right?" Shepard asks. "No," Rodney says. "Get your own present." He made Shepard's and Torn's presents specifically to avoid having to shop for them. He would have made something for Ronan, too, but he ran out of time. "Fine," Shepard says and turns around. "Then I don't have time. I have to get Taylor and Torn's presents yet, too." "Wait," Rodney says. He hates giving shared gifts. No matter how good they are, it always looks like you're just being lazy. "I'll let you share on Torin's." "What have you got for Torin?" John asks, lifting an eyebrow. "I made him a miniature puddle jumper," Rodney says, crossing his arms and looking smug. He can't help it. It's the best present ever, except for the one he made Shepard. "A puddle jumper?" John asks incredulously. "Does it fly?" "Of course not, you idiot," Rodney answers. "Torin's only 4. He's made it big enough that Torin will be able to grow into it. The seat can widen and be shifted as he gets bigger, and he's added circuitry that can be upgraded to fly later. Maybe. If the kid's good." "All right," Shepard agrees. "I can't compete with that and a pony anyway." "Ronan's giving his pony to Torin?" Rodney asks. "Seriously?" "What else would he do with it?" John asks. Rodney doesn't know, but he really doesn't think even a puddle jumper can compete with a real live pony. He's glad Ronan isn't getting anything from Madison. It turns out that Shepard's present for Ronan isn't a problem. It takes him 12 tries, and all but 4 of Rodney's Karthits, to win the grand prize. So he's got a nice collection of toys for Ronan and Lorne and Madison and a few more people he can't even think of. Rodney doesn't bring up Dave's 2 little girls. He's sure Shepard's got them something already. Shepard helps him to the jumper, and they scheme about what else they need. Shepard figures he's done except for Tayla. "Really?" Rodney asks. "What did you get me?" And Rodney needs something for Zelenka. He's leaning toward an IOU for interrupted lab time, since he's pretty sure there's nothing Radek would like better. "Come on, Rodney, that's a lousy thing to give your second-in-command." "Shows what you know," Rodney says, opening one of the panels under the co-pilot's console and putting their gifts in. "Radek's been handling the day-to-day idiots for over a year now. He even gave me a bag of coffee as an apology for calling me bad names behind my back when I had to manage the minions." Maybe I should give Lorne an IOU for paperwork. "From you?" Rodney asks rhetorically. "Hell no. Get Teldy to give it to him, and give him an IOU for a weekend off or something." "Good idea," Shepard says. "I've still got to get Taylor's gift." "Too bad," Rodney says, kicking his heels up onto the console and pulling out his laptop. "See you when you get back." Shepard eyes the laptop shiftily. "Or I could give her one of the Satidan puzzles." Rodney rolls his eyes and brings up the chessboard. "All right, Colonel Lazy Pants." Getting the pony home is a trick and a half. It fits in the back half of the jumper, but is skittish as hell. Ronan stays with it, petting its nose and making soothing noises. They take it straight to the Athosian settlement. There's no way Woolsey will even let them through the gate if he knows they have a pony on board. "Thank God," Rodney mutters to Shepard. "At least now we'll have some time to get used to it before we give him the puddle jumper." Shepard nods and grins, helping Torin onto the pony and taking them for a walk around the settlement. They head back to Atlantis before dark, and if the puddle jumper cleaning crew has a problem with the smell, Rodney never hears about it. The team gets together Christmas Eve, because Rodney insists on giving the puddle jumper to Torin on Christmas morning. Taylor's agreed to celebrate Christmas as long as they celebrate Athosian and Satidan gifting holidays as well. The Athosians have a spring ritual that involves making something by hand for your friends and neighbors, and Satida used to have a giant autumn harvest party, complete with present exchange. Rodney's had to learn how to throw together gifts for his team on a regular basis. He's getting better at it. Taylor opens Ronan's gift first. It's a beautiful handcrafted tea set, and she immediately gets up to make tea for all of them. Rodney's glad he got her a container of rock sugar for her birthday, since the tea she makes is usually extremely bitter. She insists on tea before they open more gifts, and Rodney distributes his while he waits, stacking Ronan's in a pile next to him on the floor. Shepard frowns at the card Rodney hands him, and gives Rodney a small, hand-carved box that looks suspiciously like it was made by the Satidan guy with the toys. Rodney says, leaning back and examining the box, not shaking it, but tipping it slightly in one direction and then the other. "Won't break," Shepard says, and then Rodney shakes the hell out of it. There's a single thing inside the box, and it hits the sides pretty solidly. Open my present next, Rodney says to Taylor as she hands out the tea. There's some cookies, too. Green-colored shortbready things that remind him of the Spritz cookies his weird grandmother used to make. One sip of the tea and he's reaching for the cookies to get rid of the aftertaste. Even Shepard is eating them, which means the tea has to be worse than usual. Taylor rips open Rodney's wrapping paper, with snowmen, because Jeannie knows how much he hates red and green and Santas and reindeer, and smiles broadly, oohing and aahing over the silk scarf. She opens John's gift last, and Ronan tries to take it away from her and get a better look, but she nimbly dodges him. Open yours, big guy, John says. Maybe you'll be surprised. Ronan grabs one of Rodney's first, and the unguarded look of nostalgia on his face as he traces the lettering on the front of the bookstore puzzle makes Rodney wonder if Ronan's present was such a good idea after all. You don't have to open them all, Rodney says, at least not... Ronan raises an exasperated eyebrow and tears into the rest of the packages, pushing off the low stool he'd been sitting on to put the miniatures into the correct order on the floor in front of him. That candy shop had the best gershpa, Ronan says, placing a 3-story storefront between 2 other puzzle buildings. So sour it made your whole face pucker. Something about the word pucker hits Rodney the wrong way, and he chuckles. A strangely high-pitched chuckle, actually. Did you just giggle? Shepard asks. No, Rodney says, and then does it again. He did. He did giggle. Oh my God, Shepard says, and then giggles himself. Rodney can feel his eyes opening in surprise as he glances at Shepard, who picks right that moment to snort, and then the whole team gets into the act, Taylor laughing so hard she has to wipe tears from the corners of her eyes. Ronan's flushed, color high on his cheeks, and he's puffing pretty hard, too. Shepard's mouth is twitching, like it's not used to grinning so widely, and in general, the 3 of them look even more gorgeous than they do under normal circumstances. It's so unfair that I have to be on the beautiful people team, Rodney says abruptly, and then gapes at himself and puts a hand over his mouth. I did not just say that out loud, he thinks. I just mean, he says, waving his hands around desperately, letting his mouth go on fast forward for him, hoping it's going to talk his way out of this, that you're all so gorgeous, and while I'm a genius and not bad to look at myself, it's kind of like being a misfit nerd amidst a cadre of supermodels. What? Rodney puts his head in his hands. Maybe if he sits like this long enough, they'll all get up and leave him alone with his embarrassment. I worry I'm not smart enough to keep up with you, Shepard says, and Rodney's neck pops as he whips his head around to stare. I know I'm not smart enough to get everything, Shepard amends, looking extremely uncomfortable and slightly horrified, but I can usually keep up. And then you make this huge leap, and I feel like a kid at the blackboard who doesn't know what the hell they're doing. I never know what the hell you're talking about, Ronan says, shrugging, and Rodney turns to look at him automatically, even though he wants to stare at Shepard some more. But you haven't killed us yet. Taylor laughs. I, for one, would like you to teach me more about what you do. It wouldn't hurt to have more people trained in whatever technology is available. I'm not a patient teacher, Rodney says, and Shepard snorts again. That's the understatement of the century. Oh, right! Mr. Why Can't You Just Do It, gun qualification tutor. Shepard ducks his head, turning his half-smirk away as he reaches beside his chair for his presents. Ronan's present clanks as Shepard picks it up, and as he rips off the bright wrapping paper, his face opens into stunned surprise. Beer? Shepard asks. Really? There are 12 bottles of different shapes, sizes, and colors clanking together in the makeshift box. Each has something etched into the glass. Rodney can't read any of it, so he assumes it's the native languages of wherever the stuff was brewed. Ronan nods at Rodney's present. Open yours. Rodney's present is in a tin with a giant snowflake on it, and he levers off the cover and looks in. Brownies? He lifts them up to his nose to sniff, and realizes they're not chocolate at all, even though they're the right color. They smell of figs. Lembas, Ronan says, and grins. Rodney rolls his eyes. He cannot believe Shepard showed him Lord of the Rings, or that he got Ronan to sit still long enough to watch even part of the movie. Not funny, Rodney says, and takes one out to taste it. Ronan catches his hand. Those are energy bars, Ronan explains. Like your power bars, but better. They have a natural stimulant, Taylor says. Rodney looks down at the tin again. Caffeinated power bars? That is the best idea ever! He reverently puts the lid back on the tin and only just barely refrains from hugging it to his chest. Cool. Ronan grins, and Rodney's struck again by just how ridiculously good-looking his team is. He coughs and picks up Shepard's present. He hasn't looked at Shepard since the incident with the giggling, so he glances Shepard's way to see if he's back to his slouchy self. He's got his chin on his hand, elbow resting on his knee. It's the only possible way to slouch on the Ottoman's Telekal seats. "Can I?" Rodney asks, handed the latch of the intricately carved box. Shepard blinks slowly as he nods. He looks like he's about to fall asleep. The box contains a personal shield, and Rodney stares down at the turtle shell pattern of it. He should take it apart and see if he can figure it out. The depleted one is a complete mystery to them. They can't figure out where the power source was, much less how it converted energy into an impenetrable shield. "No," Shepard says, like he can hear what Rodney's thinking. "It's to keep you safe. If we find another one, you can try and figure out how it works." Rodney catches a glimpse of Shepard's mouth hanging open before he turns away, and Taylor giggles. He hadn't expected to hear any giggles today, and now they've all done it except Ronan, and if that happens, Rodney thinks his head might explode. So he glances up at Taylor to see what's so funny. She's smiling brightly, something he sees so rarely his breath catches in his throat. "What did you do to us?" Shepard asks, and Rodney cycles through the last half an hour or so in his memories. Gigglefest, embarrassing blurted confessions, the room is spinning a little. Oh, shit! "It is my present to you," Taylor says, and produces the glass jar of pea soup. "This is Trenka. It is often used on holidays to celebrate in Athos." "What does it do?" Rodney asks, checking his pockets for his EpiPen. "He didn't forget, did he?" "It's a lot like beer," Ronan says. And that is so patently untrue, Rodney can't help but snort in reply. "You have to drink several beers to get to embarrassing, and we've only had a few sips of tea. That is by far more potent. And also, even drunk, I would never have said those things. Or Shepard, I bet." He glances at Shepard for confirmation, but Shepard is staring at Taylor with wide eyes. Taylor puts her hands up placatingly. "It lowers your inhibitions." "I like my inhibitions," Rodney says frantically, standing. "That's who I am, inhibition man. That's what makes me smarter than everybody else." He starts to pace, but his thoughts calm quickly, and he's only taken a couple of steps before he wants to sit down again. "Makes you tell the truth, too," Ronan says, and that makes Shepard get to his feet and head straight for the door, without saying a word or looking at any of them. Taylor frowns at his back as he leaves silently. "Did I do something wrong?" Taylor asks, and Rodney turns to her, wanting to be angry, but somehow unable to produce the vitriol he knows he should be spouting at her. "You drugged us," he says, his fist clenching around the personal shield still in his hand. "John spoke of spiking the punch when he was in school," she says, placid as only Taylor can be, but with a question in her face. "I assumed it was a common practical joke." Rodney gapes for a second, uncomprehending of Shepard doing something so stupid and potentially dangerous. "He didn't tell you how bad it was, and that no one should ever do it?" She looks down for a second before meeting Rodney's eyes. "He told me it was amusing. I assume no harm could come of it. You must know..." "He's never going to drink your tea again," Rodney says, and then gets a brilliant idea. "Come to think of it, I probably won't either." "It wasn't the tea," Ronan says, glancing down at the plate of cookies. Rodney groans. He's eaten at least a half dozen of them, and Shepard's eaten at least two. "It'll be a while before he trusts you. He's tough on people that way." He feels oddly calm, for all that he knows he should be angry at Taylor, and embarrassed at his outbursts, and worried for Shepard. "Is there more?" he asks. "I feel kind of peaceful." "It pacifies people," Ronan says, smiling at Rodney. Rodney smiles back, feeling like an idiot. It's good to know he can't help it. "It's fun. Good spirits, truth, peace." "It is a coveted gift in Athos," Taylor says, and for all the calming effect of the cookies, she looks genuinely distressed. "I did not understand..." Rodney walks over to her and lays a hand on her shoulder. "It's okay," Rodney says. "I'll talk to him." She stands and lowers her head in the typical Athosian way, and he brings his own down to meet it. He feels weirdly honored. She doesn't usually touch him, and certainly not with the Athosian equivalent of a hug. He picks up Shepard's abandoned gifts and nods at Ronan on his way out the door, catching the flash of Ronan's toothy grin before he leaves.
"Go away,"
Shepard calls through the door. Rodney knocks again.
"I don't want to talk to you."
If there's something that'll get Shepard to open the door, it's a present. "You haven't opened my gift, Shepard."
"We can do it later."
"I have Ronan's beer here," Rodney tries, shifting them to his other arm. They're heavy. "We could go out on the pier and have a couple."
"Go away, Rodney. I mean it."
Rodney rolls his eyes. "If you don't come out and get your present now, I'll give it to Lorne." The door shoots open, and Shepard's standing on the other side of it, glaring at him.
You wouldn't.
I would. Finally, he has an advantage over Shepard. It's habit for him to tell the truth, unvarnished and often unkind. Rodney hands the card to Shepard, who takes it gingerly between two fingers.
Won't blow up, just open it.
Shepard turns the envelope over in his hands a couple of times, looking for something.
Smart, Rodney thinks.
He'll have to do an Easter egg-type hunt for the Athosian holiday in the spring. Shepard finally tears it open and reads the card inside, sighing melodramatically.
All right, he says, throwing his hands up in defeat. Let's go wherever you stashed it.
Rodney's been working in one of the empty labs on Pier 3 for weeks. He shrugs and heads out of the room.
Come on, Cranky. You'll love it, I promise.
So, Rodney says as they exit the transporter, you're not mad at Taylor, are you?
Of course I'm pissed at Taylor,
Shepard snaps, and then puts a hand over his eyes. And that is exactly why. It's never good to be forced to tell the truth, and sometimes it's dangerous. Rodney doesn't touch Shepard, though for a second he considers putting a hand on his shoulder.
We're in Atlantis, Shepard, on a holiday. No one off-world for 24 hours. I think you're safe from being forced to give up state secrets.
Shepard starts walking again, so Rodney hurries a couple of steps to catch up, happy he seems to have put Shepard at ease. I've been working on this for 16 months, he says, as he guides them through the corridors to the lab/workshop with Shepard's present in it. It took forever to get the elements that I needed for the frame.
Frame? Shepard says, practically bouncing, standing just inside the door.
Yes, frame, Rodney says as derogatorily as he can, considering how happy he is to have Shepard's inner 12-year-old so obviously on display. And I had to order the cloth from a woman that Hawling recommended. I tested it for tensile strength, but there's no way to know exactly how it's going to work until we try it out, and...
Rodney, Shepard says, sounding only slightly exasperated.
Yes, yes, Rodney says, and moves the dry erase board out of the way to reveal a drop cloth-covered contraption.
Here it is.
Shepard steps up, grinning like he never does, and puts a hand on the cloth. For a moment, Rodney thinks he isn't even going to uncover his gift. He's just going to sit there rubbing the drop cloth between his fingers until Rodney has a heart attack. And then he pulls it off, one quick snap of his wrist, and it's revealed in all its glory, gleaming in the artificial light of the lab, the old-fashioned flame pattern on the wings rippling like it's really on fire.
A hang glider?
Shepard breathes, so quietly Rodney almost misses it.
Not just any hang glider, Rodney says.
It's made of naquadon and trinium and a few other elements that were just lying around.
Touch it.
Shepard does, his hand outstretched before Rodney even told him, and as soon as he touches the metal it glows with a vaguely blue tint that all of Atlantis seems to have when Shepard comes knocking.
You can control it with your mind, Rodney says, laughing.
It took him forever to reverse engineer the HUD interface.
This is fantastic, Shepard says, running his hand down the frame. I love you so much.
Shepard's hand stutters as it smooths the cloth where it's attached to the frame, and Rodney almost misses it. Shepard's already moved on to slipping the flame-plated black cloth between his fingers.
What?
Rodney asks, flicking his eyes up to Shepard.
I love it, Shepard says, but the simple joy is gone.
His forehead is squinched up, and he's absently rubbing his hand over the frame, not paying attention.
Can we take it up?
He asks, finally lifting his eyes to Rodney's. Rodney's torn. He can ask for the truth and get it, if he wants. He's not stupid. He knows there's something going on between them, something more than the friendship that's an anchor for his life in Atlantis. He'd always thought Shepard would tell him when Jennifer broke up with him, or come clean when DADT was repealed. But no, nothing. Rodney can get an answer now, a truthful answer, something that could lead to something else. He stares at Shepard for a long second.
Okay, he says, let's take it up.
It takes a few days for things to smooth out, but his easy back and forth with Shepard comes back almost immediately, and Shepard doesn't stay mad at Taylor long. Rodney finds he's not mad at her at all, though that might be because she gave him his real Christmas present, the ZPM, when they got back from testing the hang glider out on the mainland. Rodney finds himself waiting again, waiting for Shepard to show up at his door, or to say something when they're sitting too close as they watch movies, or to do something when he comes to hassle Rodney into eating something when he's been in the lab too long. Nothing happens. He can feel the little voice inside sighing with relief.
Shepard's too complicated, it tells him. Besides, maybe you heard him wrong, saw it wrong, took it the wrong way. How could he possibly want you anyway?
Oh, shut up, Rodney mutters into his coffee. He putters around the lab, moving from project to project, too distracted to concentrate on one of his own, but distracted enough to catch mistakes out of the corner of his eye as he wanders by other people's work. He rolls his eyes when Shepard walks into the lab. "What are you doing here?" Shepard's in his running gear, sweating but Ronin-less, so Rodney knows he saw the light on too early in the morning and came in to see if Rodney's been up all night. Shepard puts his hands up in self-defense. "Senior staff this morning," he says, backing up. "Just checking you'll be awake." "Why not?" Rodney asks, mostly to that annoying little voice in his head, but also to Shepard. "Because you've probably been up all night?" Shepard answers, carefully, like Rodney's losing it. Which he supposes he is, sort of. Rodney shakes his head impatiently. "No." Shepard stops backing up, but he looks wary, so Rodney doesn't move. He's determined now, because it's stupid to leave this out there, hanging around like an undiagnosed disease. "So," Rodney starts, letting the wheels of his thought process get on track. "You love me. You've told me so twice now." Shepard looks startled, and for a moment, Roddy's pretty sure he's going to bolt. Rodney does what he does best, and keeps talking. "I love you too," Rodney says automatically, because that's never been a question, and because it's only fair he let his own crap hang out there to keep Shepard's company. Shepard still looks like a deer caught in the headlights, but there's a minute shift in his posture that lets Rodney know he's not going to run right this second. "I'm only going to ask you once, and I'm going to take you at your word." It's harder to get the question out than he expected. It's stuck in his throat, and Rodney knows he has to ask. It's stupid to leave this question mark hanging between them, but it's more harrowing than he expected, especially with the way Shepard looks like his eyeballs might fall out of his head if he opens his eyes any wider. "You don't have to answer right away," Rodney says, because the reassurances slide out of his mouth easy as pie, right past the thing he's actually trying to say. He swallows and opens his mouth, and Shepard starts moving, turning his back on Rodney and taking a step toward the door. "Shepard," Rodney says, and Shepard stops and lowers his head. It's easier to talk to Shepard's back, Rodney thinks, and finally asks, "Do you want to?" It's not the sort of thing you ask, not with words. This is supposed to just happen. One of them leans in, or puts a hand on a shoulder, or... Shepard's standing still, right inside the doorway to the lab, head down, and Rodney crosses the couple of feet between them and asks the question right. His hand is steady as he reaches for Shepard, and he doesn't even know what he's going to do until his fingers clasp Shepard's bicep. He doesn't have to tug to get Shepard to turn around and face him. "Your answer is yes," Rodney says, taking the step that reduces the distance between them to inches. "I know this, because I'm always right," he continues, right over Shepard's spluttered objections. "At least about the important things." When he leans in, Shepard's there to meet him. The end. So, it's 11:29 at night, and I have work I was supposed to be doing, and I have sleep I'm supposed to be doing, and here I am recording this podfic because PodAware just ended, and a lot of people have been talking about podfic, and man, I miss it a lot. I miss everything a lot. I'm busy right now, but there's something about reading out loud that is just so pleasing, especially, you know, I mean, you guys don't get to hear this because I edit out all my laughter, but I'll tell you, when I read a story by someone that makes me laugh, like Pistol, for example, I swear to God, half of the stuff I cut out is actual laughter, the lines, and I have to record like 4 times to get through it, and there's a lot of that in this story, and I just, you know, I wanted to record this because Christmas is coming up, and it seems like this is a really nice little treat. And something that I wrote for Mrs. Hamill ages ago as a gift for SGA Santa, and she just had the best prompt ever, which was world peas, $1 million, a pony, and a really fun slash story about John and Rodney. And somehow this weird little thing came about. So it was fun. I hope you enjoyed, and the story and the podfic are on AO3 if you're looking for a place to say hi. Thanks.